welcome to the Pocket Gamer Podcast. It's episode number 420. My name is James Gilmore. Joining me today is Glenn Fox.
Hello.
And replacing M temporarily for this week is you had a really nice name, Chief Operations Person. I don't know what we're going to call you, but our overlord is Dave Bradley.
Hello there, making my debut on the podcast.
I know, right? Are you a long-time listener? You don't have to lie.
No, you can long-time listener, first-time caller.
All right, sweet. Okay, then. So for context, if Glenn is the editor of Pocket Gamer and I do App Spy, Dave operates us like puppets on strings.
I am the puppet master. I'm behind the scenes. I am I work in the shadows to serve the light.
So yeah, he's going to be joining us for the episode this week, which has got, like, not quite so much news, but an awful lot of new releases, both on the mobile and the Switch front. The big news, probably, Animal Crossing is everywhere at the minute. It's all up in everyone's faces. Have you groped it yet, anybody?
Yeah, it dropped a day early as well, right? It was supposed to, I think it came out soft launch last week, and then we were expecting it, I think, yesterday, but it dropped earlier in the week, which is quite exciting.
It did, caught everyone off guard. They were scrabbling to get the servers up and running, because people in the UK were complaining about it. But I've managed to get my hands on it. I know you have, Glenn.
That's right.
Done a quick rub, so we'll be chatting about that in the news and the new releases, alongside, I always hate saying this because it's so difficult, Player Unknown's Battlegrounds.
PUBG.
I know, right? Which is sort of on mobile now. Not for real, but in a, let's say, inspired format, or a cribbed from format, in the form of Rules of Survival. We'll be chatting about that alongside some other games, including Jump Drive. We've got the likes of The Inner World 2, The Last Wind Monk. And how's about a bit of Puzzle Fighter, a bit of Street Fighter action with your Match 3 puzzler? Fancy it? Tough, you're getting it anyway. Plus, I was honoured to be joined by the Dave Gibbons, what co-came up with The Watchmen with Alan Moore and worked for 2000 AD and did Rogue Trooper and Rogue Trooper Redux, which is the game that has recently come out on Switch. He's going to tell us all about it, his career, and how he uses mobile tech and tablets in his drawing work. But first, it's the news. I never had a Tamagotchi. My parents were like, see that plastic thing there that you really desperately want? That's a waste of money, that is. That's not going to last. It's going to be a fad. So I was the person at school without one. Did anyone else get Tamagotchis?
I did. I had a Tamagotchi.
What?
In 1997. Yeah, I had a red one. A little red went one. Yeah. Because I'm considerably older than you, James, I was actually already a games journalist at the time, and I had one, and I had it by my desk in the office when I was working.
Is that the excuse, that it was for work purposes?
It was hard to to justify that. I was on a magazine called PC Format at the time, which is sadly no longer with us. But yeah, so I had a Tamagotchi, and I tried very hard to keep it alive. And then my friend Mel thought it would be hilarious to try and kill it. So, which I was gutted about.
Your friend Mel was absolutely right. That was the main purpose of those things, as far as I could tell.
Yeah, I was kind of horrified by that, and then I think I got drunk and left it in a pub anyway, so it was all for nothing.
That's a tragic tale.
Yeah, there's no happy ending to this one, but yeah, no, I had one. I was temporarily obsessed with that when the fad first came around.
Did you manage to avoid it, Glenn?
I think so. I think my sister had one, and I remember looking at it and thinking, what's the point when I've got a Game Boy?
But fair point. I didn't have that either. Yeah. I paint the picture of a very deprived childhood. It wasn't. It was fine. I just didn't have any of this business. Well, in keeping with the current fad of everything that you remember from the 80s/90s coming back to haunt you and rob your wallet, My Tamagotchi Forever has been revealed, which is a Tamagotchi app. So there's only an advert for it at the moment. It's appearing in 2018. We don't have much more details other than the extremely cute and ever so slightly disturbing trailer that we've got for it, which looks like it's going to live on your smartphone, of course, and I don't know if they're going to do augmented reality stuff. It looks like a little bit AR to me. Have you seen the trailer?
I have. It does look a little bit AR, doesn't it? It looks a little bit AR. It looks a little bit Animal Crossing-y as well in some of the ways that it works.
You're going to have to manage bits of its daily life beyond just the feeding.
Yeah, the town bit at the end of the trailer, I don't know if you saw that. It's like for a tiny few seconds. That looks very Animal Crossing.
Yeah, so presumably they're all going to go and live in a nice home. Mm. And I would be surprised if your Tamagotchi couldn't hook up with other people's Tamagotchis. That would make sense, right?
Yeah, why not? Get that social stuff. That's what people like, isn't it, on mobile? Just being friends with people and sharing stuff.
Sharing their collective despair. Yeah, that's what keeps us going. Well, it's just a small thing. Check out the trailer because it is ever so daft. And it will be arriving sometime in 2018, but we will keep you up to speed. In more current news, it's Black Friday, which is that holiday that was originally a US thing and has now been exported all over the world to the misery of everyone who sits with a browser constantly refreshing every 5 minutes to see if anything good's popped up. But we're here to take the sting out of that for you, because over on Pocket Gamer, we've got a whole bunch of our accessory guides and health and fitness apps and smart home appliances and everything basically related to tech and also games. We've got articles on where you can get the best deals, which are being updated second to second, let's say. Em is going to be knocking out a new one today as well. So if you are looking for your Black Friday bargains on mobile, then we do have them. How's everybody done in resisting the pull of the games bargain so far?
Been pretty good. There's a few things on my Steam watch list which I notice have dropped in price, so I might have to go and grab those later. I'm also trying to get into smart home stuff and automating my house from my phone.
So really?
There's a bunch of Amazon have of course discounted loads of Alexa stuff, but there's loads of smart home stuff that's on sale, and I'm kind of bookmarked it all, and I'm trying to decide whether I want to spend some money on that and hook up my, you know, be able to turn my lights on from my phone and that kind of stuff. So
that sounds so good.
We haven't really talked about this, but it is a major part of the whole new like mobile tech push is this idea that you control your entire home, your oven, your central heating from your iPhone,
whatever.
I have been slightly tempted by it. It's just been a case of, initially when they came out, the bulbs were like £60 and stuff, and it just seemed a bit ridiculous. But now they're much more affordable, aren't they?
Yeah, well, I mean, especially today on Black Friday, there's a bunch of stuff at prices off. But yeah, they are. I mean, you can get an Amazon Alexa at the moment for about £34 or something. Which is about a voice controller. And then the price of the kind of hub to bring down, to control your lights and things, that the prices have come right down. Yeah, you can get a switch, a plug with an IP address so that you can control stuff from the Casa app on your phone or whatever for about £20 or something like that. So yeah, the price will come right down. There's a category for that in our Pocket Gamer accessory guide as well, actually, the smart home stuff.
Good, staying on brand there. Very
always,
good.
Always get a plug in.
The thing with my situation is that I like the idea of it, and all of the interconnected hub business is really solid. Like, I love the fact that I can throw music from my Bluetooth to any speaker in the house and all that. That's really handy. However, I, being a games hack person, live in a comparatively small flat. Like, I don't have a big home. And for me, it's that thing where, like, the light switch is just there. And it feels a little bit like, I don't know, are we heading towards that Wall-E future where you're just, like, sitting in your floating chair and everything is just within arm's reach and I don't ever have to move my legs ever again? If I had a big house, like, and I wanted to control it and really annoy my kids if I had kids by switching off all their stuff at 10 o'clock exactly, remotely, that would be really funny and useful. But I don't know if I'm just being a bit too gauche with my, like, my making my light go pink and then turning it off from my sofa. I don't know. Are you into it, Glenn? Do you fancy it?
Yes, but again, like, I've got a similar problem. My flat's too small for it now and I don't really have any things to like tweak, but like when I have an actual house, I can't wait to see the little gadgets around. One of my friends has actually just bought the I think it's the Nest smart thermometer.
Yes, I've seen those.
God, it's so nice on his wall. It's just like you just have to spin it and then his temperature changes. And like I was just like, why has it never been this easy? You know, when you go to hotel rooms and they've got like the air con stuff and you can tweak around with it, and it always just looks like a army thing.
You need a PhD to control it. Or
yeah, it looks like you're trying to deactivate an alarm or something.
Yeah, I just can't believe that only now has it been made easy to use.
They tried to upsell me to one of those when I had my boiler checked, and again, I was in a situation of like, well, I could, but it's just the switch is just there in the kitchen. I can just flick it; it's fine, and it costs like £200. I'm good. I'm all right. I don't need to be that warm. But I was raised in that household where my dad was like, "Don't turn the heating on. Just put a blanket on your face."
I think the Nest controller, though, it is. I think it's one of the most the whole integrated thing with your heating is one of the most expensive smart home things you can do. But I understand that it can kind of learn your patterns and your rhythms and things, so that you know it can automatically start automatically adjusting the temperature for like when you're in or out of the house, and it knows what times of day that's likely to be and stuff. So I love all this. This automation and AI and voice control stuff. No, I'm well up for it. Well, as you know, I live in a gigantic mansion. So I need all the digital servants I can get to help me out during the day.
I still fear the fact that Alexa is listening at all times. It's why I don't have one. I still object to the idea that in order for that tech to work, it has to always be listening to what you're saying, so it can recognise when you say Alexa. So just you have to be aware that there are at least one microphone in your house recording everything you say all of the time, and that really puts me off.
I've actually got my head around that pretty quickly. So I've got an Alexa device here who's no doubt listening to this, and probably I shouldn't have said Alexa just a minute ago.
Now it's listening.
You've been
rumbled. But if you do want to check out any of that kind of tech stuff and see whether it's cheap, as I say, we have all the listings over on PG, so go and have a look and nab yourself a bargain, because hey, late capitalism. Dave Gibbons is a big name in the comics world, creating art and characters for British sci-fi comic 2000 AD, as well as co-creating the seminal Watchmen books. But he's also had a storied career in video games, working on Sierra's point-and-click classic Beneath the Steel Sky and the Broken Sword series. More recently, Rogue Trooper, a game which was based on his 2000 AD character of the same name, has appeared in a revamped Redux form over on the Nintendo Switch. Thank you for joining me today, Dave.
You're very welcome, James. Pleasure to be here.
Now, we'll go to Rogue Trooper Redux just briefly at the start here, because it's arrived on the Switch. We've done reviews over on PG. The comic itself is from back in the 2000 AD days, and it was originally made in 2006 and brought over into sort of 3D form. What was it like to see your 2D comic characters rendered in black and white in monochrome on the page, and then suddenly they're wandering around a 3D environment with other people controlling them? Was that weird? Was it a surreal thing to see for the first time?
Well, you know, it's an experience that I've had with games and with movies as well. And it's always a huge thrill because, you know, as you say, it's taking something which just kind of lay there flat and kind of breathing life into it and actually see it have motion and colour. And I think, you know, that the Rogue game has been really quite faithful to the atmosphere and the kind of action that we tried to depict in 2000 AD. I mean, I think it's a kind of natural for a game because, I mean, the whole thing about it is it's a guy running around shooting things, which I understand is what the young people like.
That's video games 101, yeah, pretty much. Well, you've mentioned that you've done it in films as well. We're talking specifically about the Watchmen movie, the Zack Snyder film on which you were a consultant. I imagine it's quite, I mean, above all things, it's a lengthy process. I mean, it takes like minimum 2 years to make these kind of films. And I'm curious from like your perspective, seeing your characters go up there, how much involvement did you have? Were you able to sort of have an influence there, or was it mostly a case of just, you know, dipping in and checking they've got the right names, the right colours, that sort of thing?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think as much as a consultant, I was almost in the position of a kind of a pope or something. You know, I was sort of there to oversee what they were doing and give them my benediction. I remember the very first shot that Zach did while I was there, when he shouted cut, he turned to me and looked, and I gave him two thumbs up, and I think that I think that was all he really needed to know from me. And I mean, I know a lot about comics. I don't really know much about the making of movies, and I'm quite happy if I'm convinced that the people who are working on it know what they're doing, just to leave them to it. And I mean, as far as design work and stuff was done for the game, I mean, Watchmen is so comprehensively drawn, there's kind of 300 odd pages of it, that really I said everything I needed to say there. But it was great to go around their production office and see, you know, blown up huge on their walls, pages from the comic in individual panels, interspersed with their own production drawings and storyboards. And the whole thing was even more of a surreal thrill than seeing characters come to life on a game, on a monitor, you know, to actually stand in a room with the real living, breathing, three-dimensional characters was truly strange.
Well, when it came out, I mean, the reactions to the film like had very positive reactions from some places. People criticised elements of it not working so well as a film in terms of pacing and whatnot. But the one thing everybody said, which was 100% right, is it was so faithful to the comics to the point where essentially the comics were basically storyboards for the film. And it's kind of a testament to how impactful that work originally was to that generation of people and subsequent people who visited it in later years. And that must be nice. They've stayed so close to what you did.
Of course. I mean, the thing was that Zack Snyder was sort of, you know, doomed if he did and doomed if he didn't. If he made a thing that was absolutely faithful to the comic book, it would not have been as good a movie. If he'd made something which had excised everything in the comic book that didn't fit in a movie, he'd be damned as well. And I think he walked a very, very fine line between the two. And, you know, you're talking about people having respect and being fans of the book. There was no bigger fan and nobody with more respect for it than Zack was. And he was very conscious of every change he was making. And indeed, there's the bit at the end where people were getting quite exercised because there was no squid. But in fact, if you look very carefully at the closing moments of it, there's a scene where there are some kind of readout panels, you know, kind of dials and arrows and things whizzing round as all the energy builds up. And that actually says on it something like sub-quantum interference device. So it actually says squid. So there is a squid at the end of the movie. But basically, you know, the way I feel is there didn't have to be a movie. But if there was going to be a movie, I think it probably turned out to be as good as anybody could possibly expect.
What do you feel now that comic book characters essentially have the run of Hollywood? I mean, must be a far cry for the days when comics back in the, you know, 60s, 70s, your Kirby's and your Stan Lee's and whatnot, where part of it's aimed at children, another part of it is an adult but very niche audience. And now they're effectively fully mainstreamed pop culture characters that everybody and their mum is aware of and goes and visits. Do you embrace that kind of mainstreaming of it, or do you think it's lost some of its kind of special attraction in the process?
Well, there used to be a certain subversive kind of rebel charm to comics, particularly things like 2000 AD, which set out to be anti-establishment. And in a way, when it's every fan's dilemma, you know, they want their things to be successful, but they don't want everybody to be a fan of it. You know, I mean, it happens a lot with music. You know, the minute you hear your mum or your dad whistling along to one of your favourite songs, you just don't like it anymore. I mean, I suppose in many ways, before the recent superhero movies, a lot of the kind of movies that Bruce Willis or Arnold Schwarzenegger would be in were superhero movies in all but name. But I think Marvel in particular have actually built an incredible franchise, a thing which is almost organic in the way that it expands and explores different avenues and all hooks up within a coherent universe. And I think the most important thing is that now the people who are making these movies were comics fans, have the sensibilities of comics fans, and really want to take these fantastic and impossible things, you know, very, very seriously. I think you can be too serious. But I think Marvel have hit that exact right balance between things that are kind of fairly fairly adult and subtle in their sensibilities, but still have that wonderful, you know, grandeur and daring do that the best superhero comics have got.
Well, going back to some of the first games you worked on, I mentioned Beneath a Steel Sky, which is a, you know, point-and-click adventure from back in the sort of early 90s, I think it was, late 80s, early 90s. But the kind of art that you were doing there is very much like 2D pre-rendered background. So when you're actually creating those, drawing those, are you doing that on a computer? Are you doing that pen and paper, paint, cells? How are you doing that, and how is it getting into the game?
Well, I mean, I've got memories of putting together the artwork for Beneath the Steel Sky, and I was tasked to do two things. One was design the characters, and the other was to design the backgrounds. Now, the characters were all done using a program called D-Paint, Deluxe Paint.
Really? You did them on D-Paint? That's fantastic.
They were done on an Amiga computer, and the sprites were assembled.
Oh, mate.
The sprites were assembled pixel by pixel. You know, what I used to do was kind of click a few colours in and then go and stand on the other side of the room and see what it looked like and come back and click a few more pixels. So that was quite a laborious way of doing that. I didn't have to animate them. It was actually Revolution, who were the developers who actually animated them. As far as the backgrounds are concerned, I drew them all out in pencil. I did really clean line designs with all the perspective and all the necessary gameplay areas worked out, but they were then painted over by an animation background artist whose name shamefully eludes me at the moment, but he hand painted all of those, and I can remember the thrill of seeing the first one scanned and displayed on a then absolute state of the art 20-inch Apple CRT monitor, and it was just fantastic. You know, I thought, this is the future, this is great. But since then, of course, I mean, I do so much of my artwork directly on the computer, and now it's just like drawing on paper, except it's already on screen. You can incorporate 3D elements in it. You design the characters just as you design them for live action or for a comic book. So the technology there has moved on incredibly. The thing that I thought was really amazing about Beneath the Steel Sky was the conversion they did so that you could play it on your iPhone or your tablet, and it just looks so good on there, because what would have looked really crude and blocky on today's big monitors on that smaller screen looked lovely and sharp and clean and very, very stylish. And I think they had almost as much success on that reiteration as they did with the game when it originally came out.
Yeah, it did really, really well on touchscreens. And as you say, point-and-click adventures suit the touchscreen format anyway, because you are effectively dragging a mouse around the screen, clicking on objects of interest, and you can do that with your finger, and it's even more organic in some ways. Also, the backlighting of everything. As you say, when you put something on a screen, suddenly everything pops.
Yeah, everything looks suddenly luminous, you know. And I think what I would also have to say about Beneath the Steel Sky, and as I say, I'm not an expert gamer, but I understand from everybody that it is a very good game. You know, any considerations of graphics aside, it is a very good game. And I think that's true in games as much as it is in movies, that the story or the gameplay is really the most important thing. Doesn't matter how you dress it up visually, if it plays well or it reads well, that's what you're really, really going for. So, yeah, I was really pleased to be associated with Beneath the Steel Sky, which, you know, really over the decades has had great longevity and has got great respect.
Yeah, and deservedly so. The reason I screamed at D-Paint mentions is because my first ever home computer was an Amiga. I had Amiga 500, and it came with Deluxe Paint 3, and that was the thing that I first started doodling around on. But it's come along so much, as you say. Now, when it comes to things like mobile devices, we are primarily like a mobile site. When you're drawing on computers, do you use things, for example, like iPads? The tablets have become these incredible platforms for artists to use for either preliminary sketches or for doing the actual full finished stuff. Or do you use touchpads for your PC? What's your preferred method?
Well, I've always worked on a Mac, maybe because right at the very beginning, the kind of graphics software and displays were much better on a Mac, and I still do use one. But I do most of my actual artwork on a Wacom Cintiq tablet, which is basically a monitor with a graphics tablet in it, so you appear to be drawing on the image. And that's tremendously, that feels just like drawing on pen and paper, but with all the advantages of rejigging things and adjusting things to your heart's content. You know, someone said to me, the best thing about doing art on a computer is you can change your mind forever. But the worst thing about doing art on the computer is that you can change your mind forever. I've sort of got my digital workflow down to something which very much approximates my real life workflow for drawing. But you mentioned the iPad Pro, and that is an incredible tool for doing sketches and for working on stuff in that kind of stage where you're doing roughs or designs or compositional layouts. Compared to what things were, back in the day beneath the steel sky, things are just transformed. All the hardware and software is artist friendly, and as an artist you don't have to be a techie to be able to get best use out of them.
Yeah, you mentioned it, like optimizing your workflow essentially for things like digital stuff to prevent you just from changing things forever. I mean, it's the same. I do like video editing primarily, and there's this thing that I'm sure every person who does anything creative does, which is nothing's ever finished. You just have to stop working on it.
You just abandon it. You just abandon it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, when it comes to your style, because when you're working on physical media, when you're working with pens and pencils and paints and stuff, once you've inked something, it's kind of inked.
Yes.
And if you've screwed it up, well, you're going to have to start all over again. So maybe you make a decision to go with the mistake, and maybe the mistake is sort of beneficial in some ways. There's something serendipitously good about it, you realize later. Do you think it's changed your style working in digital at all?
Well, the funny thing is, you know, over my long career as an artist, I've used all sorts of materials to draw with. I've drawn with brushes dipped in Indian ink, dip pens. I've worked with fountain pens, markers. I've used pencil and then changed the levels on that on the computer to get a different look to it. I've drawn digitally on a Wacom Cintiq. But when I look at my work, I can't now tell you what was drawn with what. I think your style does still show through. But as far as mistakes are concerned, I've never been overly worried about those. It may be because I work to a kind of method that by the time I come to put that final inked line on, I'm, you know, really confident, really sure about what I'm going to do. I use the occasional undo when I'm drawing, but I'm very unlikely to redraw the whole thing. The thing that did happen to me when I was first using one of these Cintiq tablets was that I was inking something in and I'd filled in a large area of black with the paint bucket, and I moved my arm across to draw something in the top corner, and I reeled back pulling my arm away because I thought I'd smudged the black ink.
Oh, really?
It's utterly impossible, but I thought, yeah. You know, this is real for me now. This feels exactly like the real thing.
Is there anything that you're currently working on in any medium, really? Like, what's on your screen at the minute?
Well, I'm lucky enough these days to pick around with things that just interest me. I did work a little bit with the people down at Hello Games on No Man's Sky. I helped put together a little comic book for that, because basically to begin with, No Man's Sky is a blank universe or an unexplored universe anyway, and we thought it would be fun to explore some of the unexplored bits with some comic book stories, and so we did a little booklet which had a couple of stories in it, which was good fun. But I've always been, my training at school and everything was in the sciences, so I've always been interested in science and technology. I've been involved for some time with a company called Madefire, who do digital comics, what we call motion books. And if your listeners want to seek them out, they're on the App Store, both the Android and the Apple App Store, and they're online anyway. Madefire, Madefire, and there's a lot of free content on there, and it's a really interesting hybrid of traditional comics and what you can do with, as it were, intelligent paper.
I've seen a bunch of those. It's a really nice way of bringing just a little bit of motion, a little bit of movement into the scene.
Yeah, we discovered, I had some early experience with the Watchmen motion comic, which wasn't tremendously successful, because it looked like, kind of, to be honest, cheap animation, although it wasn't cheap. But with Madefire, it's very much a reading experience. You read it as you would a book. You click onto the next page when you're ready to click onto the next page. And there's another company called Magic Leap, which is a very highly mysterious startup at the moment. It's had tremendous investment in it. And this is something that I think is going to really change the world. I'm a creative consultant with them, and Madefire 2 are involved with them. And again, if your listeners want to know more about that, they should look at magicleap.com, where they will be teased to within an inch of their life. But but take it from me, what's coming is absolutely mind-blowing.
And about this week, let us start off with the big release. As we mentioned before, it appeared a bit last week in some territories and then dropped a day early this week to the confusion of the UK servers. It's Animal Crossing Pocket Camp, which is the mobile incarnation of the popular series. It's been stripped down, it's been pared back, it's free to play, so you can obviously spend real world money in it. And the response so far has been relatively cautiously positive, I think. I don't know how you guys have felt the social media reaction to this.
Yeah, but largely positive. I have to say, although I have downloaded it and had a go, I was never an Animal Crossing fan, so I wasn't hugely into previous incarnations of it either. I think maybe whatever it just fell at either the wrong type of game for me or it fell at the wrong time. But I seen a lot of chatter on Twitter. People seem to be really enjoying it, and we've got people swapping their friend codes on Pocket Gamer on the story that Emily put up. She's not with us today. Maybe she's out playing Animal Crossing. Who knows? Were you always a fan back in the day of Animal Crossing?
Yeah, I mean, I used to. I've only played one, and that was Wild World on DS, which seems to be the one that everyone has played. And I remember loving it back in the day when I got it. I got it around Christmas, alongside a GameCube game or something. And I remember just being completely obsessed with that and finding it really weird because you don't really do anything in Animal Crossing, but everything you do is nice. So I was really excited for the mobile one because on paper it was like, oh, everything I like about Animal Crossing, but just in a really easy and streamlined way. And then I played it, and there's nothing really there.
Well, some people have commented that. There's been an initial, oh, God, it's here, and it's so cute, and everybody loves it. And, people should be familiar with the franchise, but if not, it's kind of a sort of a life sim where you're just wandering about. In this case, it's an island, and you're building up a campsite rather than a full village, which is what it is in the other games, I think. And the idea is you're just supposed to, acquire objects to make your campsite nicer, buy a sofa, get a lamp in, and then meet friends who are all around this island, and then they might say, hey, I'm quite hungry, I could do with a fish. So you go out and you cast your little fishing line into the water, and you fish for a fish, and you bring it back, and it's like, ah, you're my best mate now, and the little heart symbol goes up. Then you invite them over to your camp, and they hang out and sleep in your hammock. And that's kind of the game.
Do you get to shoot anyone with a shotgun in the face?
No. You're right, it's not a game, actually, is it? No, because the shotgun quota is worryingly low. But the cute quota, through the roof, because it's adorable and everyone does that joggly thing where no one can stand still in a Nintendo game. I don't know if you noticed this. Everyone just kind of wobbly, bobs their head around, and it's just like, ah, we're so happy about everything. Isn't it nauseating? But no, it's not nauseating, it's nice, it's cute. What you said, Glenn, I've had some people say that they've been playing it really hardcore for about 3-4 days, and they're starting to feel like they've already exhausted what they can do within the context of the game.
One of the things for me that I used to love was the exploration aspect of it was actually quite nice. You just got given this sort of nice environment that it spun like a little globe, so when you moved you could always see the horizon moving like it was a very small sphere you lived on. And you would just sort of wander around the environment, seeing people going about their daily chores and stuff. You might see someone at the beach fishing at a certain time, etc. And the seasons would change in real time with your actual seasons. So it was just really nice just to wander around and see what had changed, see what had been affected by time and all the other animal citizens living their life. And for me, that's kind of been lost in this one. And what's been replaced has kind of just been some really horrible cover-up of free-to-play, because it's all timers. When you get an apple off a tree, you got a timer come above the tree saying 2 hours 30 minutes. And I know that's mobile and I shouldn't be so fussy, but it's not really, I don't think it's what people want from Animal Crossing. Like, when you played the DS version or the 3DS version and you got an apple from a tree, you wouldn't need a timer to tell you that the apple takes time to grow back. You just go, okay, I'll come back tomorrow and get the apple again. And, right. and that's how it kind of worked. And this one just feels very cynical and very un-Nintendo in a way. And I kind of feel like ultimately it's going to go the way of Miitomo did. I just feel like everyone's going to kind of forget about it.
You reckon it's going to be flash in the pan? See, I don't know because this kind of stuff for me doesn't lend itself to sitting there and playing it for hours because it is just, well, you know, you're grinding for items and objects so you can build your furniture. And to me, this does feel more mobile friendly than other games. Like, I'm more certainly more than something like Mario, where with this, it's just like, I'll grab a couple of bits and I'll set my chair building and then you can come back tomorrow and say, hey, my chair's built, and I can put it into the little camping area and then a talking fox will be happy. And then, you know, rinse and repeat for a few days. It's not the kind of thing I would sit there and play for 5 hours straight, you know, which is usually the problem with free-to-play games because they'll often gate you. They'll say, right, stop playing. You've run out of energy or you've run out of tickets, or in this case, it's leaf cash tokens. Whereas in this, you don't really have that. You can play as much as you want, but you just have to wait for trees to grow back and some resources to appear. And I don't know, do you really want to sit there arranging furniture for 5 hours straight?
Not even in my own house?
No. I don't, but people do love that. I mean, not just in the Animal Crossing games and things, but that kind of life sim thing. There's loads of those games on Facebook, and it just harks back. It's the same thing. I never got into The Sims, which remains, you know, to me, inexplicably popular. But, the fact that, you know, it's almost like a kind of virtual dollhouse, isn't it? And I say this as somebody who used to have a Tamagotchi, but I find that I just find the experience of it quite unrewarding. I don't mind a little bit of a dabble, but honestly, you said people burnt out in 3 or 4 days. I was, 3 or 4 minutes for me. I'm like, oh.
We'll have to see how it plays out over the long term. That's with these free-to-play games, it really is about the lifespan. It is about whether this just drops off and people are still talking about it in 3 weeks, or whether people are like, what animal? Huh? And then they're onto something else. And that's what determines whether this will be ultimately a success or a flash in the pan. Like Fire Emblem had quite a long tail in the end, didn't it?
Yeah. Fire Emblem got it right, though, I feel like. It focused on the right aspect of the game. I mean, the battles in Fire Emblem have always been really addictive. And I know, obviously, it's the main aspect of the game, but those, like, was it 4x7 grid battles?
Yeah.
Where it was basically reduced to a puzzle, because you'd have to choose which units you'd bring. You could see, like, the units you were going up against, so you chose which units you could bring to beat them, and then, like, you place them on the battlefield before you go in. That was added later. It just very much felt like tiny little condensed puzzles, and that really worked. But I don't think Animal Crossing, I think, could work on mobile. I just don't think Nintendo have chose the right focus for it.
All right, well, you can download it for free, iPhone, iPad, and Google Play at the minute. Now, I'm going to struggle to say it again, PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds has the worst name in all of gaming history and has become one of the most popular ones in recent gaming history over on PC primarily, where it is one of them survival multiplayer, drop you into the middle of an island with nothing but a t-shirt on, and then you have to grab a gun and grab some stuff and then run around and try not to die. And it's one of those, like, die and you're out, that's it, style games. Been very popular, and naturally, when anything is popular on another platform, someone tries to build the mobile version, which is what Rules of Survival is. I don't know if you guys have had a chance to play this yet. Maybe not.
No, I haven't played it yet. I'm fascinated by it, though. It's kind of polarised people's opinion on it. I mean, you know, our own Harry Slater was quite scathing about the idea of Battle Royale as the format, isn't it? That's what they call it, the Battle Royale gaming format. Yeah, as mobile as a platform for that. I mean, partly because, and I think he's got a point, which is that those kind of games, because of the nature of them, they can last for ages. I mean, if it's your first time, you're likely to be out of the country in a few minutes. But actually, the idea is to survive as long as possible. And while that might be great on a PC, lengthy gaming sessions, mobile's not necessarily the best place for that. So,
well, I was surprised the first time I fired it up, and the first time I fired it up, I was like dead in a second, obviously, because I couldn't even find a gun. But then, like, the second time when I did find a gun and I was with a team of at least one or two more people, it was going on for like half an hour and it was still going, and I was like, does this have like an end? Because like, it does seem to be going on forever. The island seems quite big and there don't seem to be loads of players around to shoot me, so a lot of it was me just scavenging around empty areas really with my friends. And I don't know if that's par for the course with PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds. I get the impression it's a bit more frantic than that normally, but it's kind of, it's a bit hit and miss, this. So on the one hand, what they've done is sort of impressive. The island is very big. You're airlifted in at the beginning. You can choose when to fire your parachute, jump out of the plane, and land on the island. And then it's just a case of scavenging for the bits you need to survive, and then upgrading when you find new bits or when you manage to kill other players and take their stuff. The problems come in terms of, A, the translation's really bad, so all the text is, like, almost indecipherable sometimes as English. But that happens, you know, often if you've got international developers and, you know, the localization hasn't necessarily been great. Not a deal breaker. But the problem here is the fact that, you know, it's a third-person action adventure game with a lot of GUI. You're talking GUI all over the place. You've got all of your weapon stuff in the top right-hand corner with like four or five different slots and a reload thing. The map's in the top left. And then you've got, I mean, it looks like the GTA games brought over onto mobile in terms of you can move and then there's a fire on the left and a fire on the right and you can crouch and run and jump and there are all these tiny little buttons scattered all over the screen and the moment you walk up to or near anyone, a whole bunch more boxes pop up all over the shop and it just gets a bit visually noisy and overwhelming. And when you're trying to hit any of the buttons, especially if you're playing on like an iPhone, small screen, everything's kind of just teeny tiny and fiddly and it just doesn't feel very comfortable. Which
in any kind of sort of shooty action game, the interface is a massive problem on mobile. And I think the there are some games that get it just right. Like earlier this year, Guns of Boom was arguably, I think, probably my favourite shooter that's been on mobile. Even that, you've got the virtual joystick, the virtual thumbstick is a bit of a problem, but they've sort of streamlined the interface. I haven't tried Rules of Survival yet, but I can totally, from seeing it, seeing footage, imagine exactly what you're saying. There's just so many controls that you're just going to be flicking your thumb around the screen the whole time, aren't you? It's so cluttered. Unless it's built from the ground up to be streamlined for mobile, it's instantly going to be cluttered.
Yeah, I mean, you don't move too fast, which is a good thing. Part of what I think worked with Guns of Boom, as well as having the interface streamlined, is it's not like a light speed game. You sort of trudge around at a fairly steady pace, and that makes it easier to control. Whereas if every time you flick your finger, your character, like, you know, suddenly darts 10 meters across the room, that can be very tricky to get, you know, precise control down on mobile. So just dialing back the speed of movement a little bit really helps, I think, on mobile stuff. And it's not too fast here, but it is difficult to get past all that GUI stuff. Then you start hitting in the world physics being a bit off, and I got in a car and it just slowly kind of tilted onto one side until it was like, you know, on two wheels, which would be cool if this was an action movie and I was doing 90, but I was just doing like 2 miles an hour and it just started tilting as if there was an elephant sitting in the passenger seat. And then it just stopped and I was like, this isn't great, is it? This hasn't quite worked out. But there were people in there. And you can try it out for free at the minute. Rules of Survival is the name of it. That's both iPhone and on iPad. Now, I just saw this had just launched. So, Puzzle Fighter. This is Capcom's, let's put Street Fighter underneath a match 3 puzzler, basically.
I was just going to say, I really hope these things had died by now.
Well, apparently this... saying it's been on its way to mobile, I don't know. Did this come from a PC version or something? Or has this just been, like, pitched for mobile for a while? Because it's a Capcom thing. The art's really nice. They've got kind of almost bobblehead-y style versions of all the Capcom folks. So yes, you've got your Street Fighter a lot in there, but you've also got Mega Man jumping around and Morrigan and loads of other, you know, people from the extended Capcom universe.
Some match three puzzlers are great when they're overlaid like this. Like, for instance, I was a massive fan of Puzzle Quest back in the day. I know, you know, that's the kind of passé now. And in recent years, I've really enjoyed Glyph Quest, actually. That was one, you know, from We Heart Dragons, which is a couple of years old now. But I thought that was great. And again, a match three mechanic for a sort of role-playing type game. When they don't really move the genre on at all, it's just, you know, it's just mashing two things together. Like, for instance, I'm not a huge fan of the Family Guy three game that came out this year. And because, really, it's... You know, I like Family Guy, but it's just a match three game that doesn't really do anything.
Yeah, well, I think they're trying to pull in some of the more brawler aspects of it. So they'll have support characters, apparently, which like help out with the main character's abilities. And so it feels like a tag tournament, I think. I haven't played it yet. It's only just arrived. You can get it for free at the minute. So Puzzle Fighter is the name of that one. Something I have tried, and I'm sort of quietly impressed with this, Jump Drive. This is out as of, yesterday, I think. And it's interesting. So it takes the form of like what would appear to be a side-scrolling shmup, but you don't shoot at all. Your ship is anchored to the center of the screen. And the idea is that you have to make your way past and through obstacles by timing your jumps. So it's like your ship has a warp drive, and every time you tap, there's a point somewhere on the screen, much like if you think of something like Lara Croft Go or anything, where she can only walk along a certain route, and the route is indicated by dots. So every time you tap, you jump to the next dot, then to the next one, then to the next. It's like that. So there is a dot on the other side of this obstacle. And so, for example, it might be like a vice-like pair of jaws that are opening, closing. And you have to time the tap so that the ship will swish through as the jaws are open, and you won't get crushed in the middle. And then the obstacles are just changed throughout. So you've got lots of stuff where it's scrolling, weird spinny shurikens coming from the bottom to the top of the screen, and you have to find the gap in between and time it just right. And then you'll get lots of very complicated systems where you'll have like what look like rows of teeth, and they all concertina and move in different orders and like waves. So you have to find exactly the right moment where they'll all open up just before you hit them. And it's quite good. It's quite a neat, simple little... All you're ever doing at any time in the game is just tap, tap, tap. So it's all about timing. It's all about learning the patterns of the obstacles and picking the exact right moment. The neat trick is to stop you just sitting there for like 5 minutes waiting for you to learn the perfect pattern and then make the jump through. Your ship is actually moving, just really, really slowly. So in between jumps, you don't notice it at first. You're actually slowly drifting forward. So you do have a limit. You can't just sit there because you will just crash straight into the object. So there's this little kind of time pressure put on you going, you better do it soon, quick, before you tap away. And I think the gaps get a little bit smaller as you push through. It's a really nice minimal presentation. And I've been playing it for a bit today, quite a bit today. It's good. I like it. I'm going to say it's free, but I might be lying. I don't know. Jump Drive is the name anyway. Go and check it out in the App Store. I think we're going to do a video of it so you can have a look for yourself. Another one. The Inner World appeared. Did you guys play the first one? So it's a big point-and-click adventure cartoony thing.
I didn't myself. No? I didn't know there was a first one, actually. I thought it was...
Yeah, so this is The Last Wind Monk, which is technically the second installment. It's a very, you know, quirky point-and-click adventure. More cartoonish than the Amanita design style stuff, which looks very sort of hand-drawn and shaded. This is more block colour. And you're wandering around what's kind of like a garbage world, not a million miles away from something like Machinarium, and defeating an evil and yada, yada, yada. But we quite like the first one. It's got a lot of, again, I say charm, but it is a charming wee thing, and lots of invention, and the usual thing where some of the puzzles seem a bit preposterous. But there is there's a multi-level hint system this time to get around that, because people are aware that, like... these point-and-click adventures. They make sense if you designed the game, and make no sense to everybody else where you just start rubbing things against other things and hoping for the best.
That's how I go about my daily life, to be honest.
Exactly. That's par for the course, isn't it? Yeah. So you can get that now. That's a premium game. I think it's around £2 or £3 or dollars. I think we get that right. Oh, no more. £4.99. There you go. So it's full premium if you want to take a look. Another one I had a quick go at is PUKK, which is you're just ahead bouncing down a, let's say, track of ice, running away from a polar bear who, instead of eating you, just wants to give you a big hug, which is sweet. And you tap on the screen to accelerate so that you bounce off either side. You're basically ricocheting back and forth and back and forth and back and forth. And you're supposed to be breaking up blocks of ice and other bits to get coins and whatnot. Don't get this. Don't understand why this is fun. Was sitting there tapping and, like, the only tactic, there seems to be no tactic other than just keep tapping really, 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 really fast so you're constantly flinging backwards and forwards. Because the moment you stop tapping, you just decelerate massively and you don't get the impact to smash into things and the bear just catches you. So as far as I can tell, and you can't change the course of it, you can't steer it further left or further right or push it off at a funny angle. It just constantly does the same zigzag backwards and forwards, just slower or faster. So just faster. Obviously, seems to be the thing. I don't get it. It's free to play, and you can get that at the minute on all the platforms. And finally, I suppose we'll mention it, Sonic 2. Sonic the Hedgehog 2. Out as part of that Sega Forever free-to-play platform thing. And it's a nice Sonic, Sonic the 2. Sonic the 2. did we like it? Were we Sonic 2 fans? Did we like Tails and his Tails?
I don't like Sonic. at all.
Of course, yeah, we've
opened a can of worms there. Many is the time we've discussed the relative merits of Sonic. The office is pretty much split between Mario fans and Sonic fans, and sometimes they come to blows.
Yes.
About you then? We know where Glenn stands. Are you a Sonic man, Dave, or you always lean towards Mario?
More of a Mario fan than a Sonic fan, I'm afraid. I like the Sega Forever app and the stuff that's coming along, and I'm glad that Sonic's on it. I'm going to be giving that a go this weekend. I think I hate Sonic less than some of the other members of the team. Perhaps that's the best way to describe it.
You can love both. There's room in my heart for both Sonic and Mario. I don't think Sonic's amazing or anything, but I was a Sega kid. I like Sonic. Sonic's fine. The second one's good. It's got the Chemical Plant Zone with the Chemical Plant Zone music, which is one of the best tunes to feature in a video game ever. And for that reason alone, I will be downloading it later. Side note, I did mention this on Twitter, but it's taken me over 30 years to realise that Miles Prower, which is Tails' name, is a pun on Miles Per Hour.
Brilliant. It's brilliant. I didn't notice that either, and that is amazing.
Did you not? Oh, this is someone else. I did not know that.
That is a top fact.
2 days ago, and I was like, oh, for God's sake! How can you have been so blind?
That's like the same moment when I recently discovered that Saul Goodman from Better Call Saul it's all good, man, which I didn't realise at first. But
they even spell it out.
I know. They even
spell it out in the actual series.
I know. For some reason, it just went. I don't know. Anyway, there you go.
Yeah. Well, and that admission of astonishing daftness, that'll do for this week. That'll bring it to the end. So thank you all for listening. Thank you, Dave, for joining us. Do come
thank
back
you
in
for
future
having me.
And come back everybody and join us again next week for more news, info and mobile stuff. Like, subscribe, all the usual business, and we'll see you next time. Bye-bye.
Bye.